Welcome to the Nonfiction Writers, podcasting in a great way. I'm Ryan Aber, joined today by fellow OU beat writer Joe Masato. Joe, how are you doing today?
Doing well.
And also columnist Barry Trammell. Barry, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic on this national holiday.
It is.
It's a national holiday. We've got football time in Oklahoma. I'm headed to Stillwater. Not that I'm going to go see a real game. It's more expedition type stuff with Missouri State OSU, but I'll take anything. The scoreboard's on and the stats are counting, so it'll be fun. And then, of course, Saturday in Norman for the Fightin' Schnellenbergers against Oklahoma.
And Barry, let's start there. You actually talked to Howard Schnellenberger, obviously just a one-year wonder, if you want to say that, at Oklahoma before founding the program at Florida Atlantic. What was that like catching up with him?
Well, for most people, it would not have been any kind of religious experience, but for me, it was fantastic because I love Howard Schnellenberger, and I miss him profusely. There can't be five people in the state of Oklahoma that would say that, but I'm one of them, and it was great. He sounded good. He's 84 years old. His memory is still strong. He's messed up. He couldn't remember a few things, but you know, heck, I can't remember some things, so I'm going to give him all kinds of passes. So, no, it was great talking to him. He was he's pretty much put Oklahoma behind him. He said, I don't have many friends there, but he did say that he talked about the great job Stoops did. Said the guy behind him, John Blake, was a disaster, which everybody knows that too. So, yeah. It was fun talking to Howard Schnellenberger.
Yeah, I imagine so. Fascinating. There's all kinds of fascinating characters around this game. When you talk about Howard Schnellenberger, we know about all the fascinating ones on the Oklahoma side. But Joe, for Friday's Oklahoma, you're actually going to write about another fascinating character, a little bit, two fascinating characters. One, FAU coach Lane Kiffin, and two, Oklahoma coach Lincoln Riley, and how their paths sort of merged a couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting once I got down to it. I mean, especially with how that Houston coaching search of 2016, which probably nobody thinks about now, but I kind of looked back at it, and Lincoln Riley and Lane Kiffin were two of the three main finalists, along with Major Applewhite, who ended up getting the job. But just how things could have changed had Houston gone differently in that search, especially with OU, and I talked to Bob Stoops a little bit about it, and he was not super eager to deal in the hypothetical of had Lincoln taken that job, would he still be OU's coach? But it kind of makes you think, because Riley was the clear predecessor. Everyone, you know, talked about successor. Everyone talked about that, and that was, you know, made it easier for Bob to step away. But had Riley not still been on staff, what would have happened? So just kind of looked at that and some of the similarities between Lincoln Riley and Lane Kiffin. Both of them got their first college head coaching job at the age of 33. So kind of their careers have gone very different since then. Riley's still in the beginning. Lane Kiffin's been everywhere, but interesting to look at.
That's crazy. Lane Kiffin's what, 42?
43. According to a story I just read.
he's at the career rehab stage of his career.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, I mean, even us, we still think of Lane Kiffin as this young gun, but he's 43 is getting into the not as young age. So Lincoln Riley at 34 is legitimately young for a head coach. So Kiffin's had a lot of, you know, not too many 43-year-olds have already been the head coach at the Raiders, Tennessee Volunteers, and Southern Cal. And he's already got that in his rearview mirror and trying to get back to that level. You know, a lot of people, I don't know if this is true, but some people say that Tennessee actually considered bringing him back last year, especially after the fiasco of the search, the way it sort of disintegrated. Now, a lot of people in Knoxville still hate the guy because he left after 1 year, but he's got a lot of tread on the tires for 43.
How long is it before Lane Kiffin is back at a Power 5 school?
I think he'd be back next year if he has another good year. Yeah. Somebody will always take a chance on him.
No, I'm
especially in the SEC.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody's going to take a chance.
Kentucky, if something happened to Mark Stoops or Vanderbilt or, I mean, think of a lot of places.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that if he has a good year this year, he's going to get Power 5 opportunities, especially in that league. Joe.
Yeah, I just think it's a matter of how selective he might be. Like Kentucky, for example, I don't know if he should take a job like that, but if he stays there another year or two, you know, I think there's going to be jobs that'll set up for him to go in and kind of win right away.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see, one, how their season plays out, and two, what happens with Lane Kiffin from there. I think his experience at Alabama was so critical in rehabbing his image. You know, he was sort of this hated guy after Tennessee and really even after USC, but he's almost become sort of lovable now with his persona on Twitter, the way he is in press conferences, the way he just conducts himself in general. It seems like he's really changed the perception about him.
Yeah, he's in total image rebuild mode right now, I think, with Florida Atlantic, because things just kind of went haywire, even at Alabama with, you know, there's all the reports of him and Saban kind of sparring, and Saban maybe didn't even like him. So I think he's rebuilding his image. He's doing a pretty good job of it. Had a great start last year. Another chance this year, but it is kind of strange how he went from hated to now he's not a joke, but he's a guy that makes a lot of people laugh now because of how he kind of handles himself.
Yeah, it's been fascinating to watch, but there are two teams in this game, and one of the teams that we cover and see on a daily basis. So let's talk about that team, which is Oklahoma. Barry, let's start with this. There's a lot of position battles that we're talking Thursday afternoon at just before 2:30, and we have not yet to see a depth chart. To you, what's the most fascinating of the position groups with which, at least publicly, there's no named starter?
Well, I think it's center. With Creed Humphreys and Jonathan Alvarez, you know, people are raving about Creed Humphreys. Coaches do it. Toby Rowland did it at the Rotary Club the other day. What's interesting to me is nobody ever raves about Jonathan Alvarez. So my question is, why is this so close? If everybody's raving about Creed Humphreys, they were raving about Creed Humphreys last year as a true freshman when he didn't even play. So, you know, I've heard you say you think it'll be Creed Humphreys, and I agree with you. I just don't know why they're – I guess it's in out of respect to Alvarez, who's been a loyal soldier, yeah. A fifth-year guy, 21 career starts. But, man, it seems like that's Creed Humphreys' job.
Yeah, and Bill Beedenbo's talked time and time again about how he doesn't want to flip centers. He's got to stick with one guy. I think Jonathan Alvarez just becomes a really good insurance policy. And I think, Joe, we talked about this last week, just becomes a guy who can not only play center if Humphreys goes down, but can play either of those guard spots if something were to happen there. He's done it before. So I don't know if you feel bad for Jonathan Alvarez for it, but you sort of understand why they are in a tough position with what they announced there. Joe, outside of the center spot, there's the battle for left tackle versus right tackle. We know who those two guys are going to be with Bobby Evans and Cody Ford. There's the battle at weak side linebacker between Curtis Bolton and Caleb Kelly. Then there's a couple battles at safety. Which other one of those maybe do you think is most critical or most important here going into the opener?
I think that weak side backer battle is really interesting with Curtis Bolton and Caleb Kelly. Just you've got a former five-star guy in Caleb Kelly and Curtis Bolton, who, you know, has had kind of an on and off career and haven't seen that much of him, even though he's a senior now. And, you know, they moved Caleb Kelly around a little bit, but maybe Bolton could still be that guy. I mean, I think that's a really fascinating battle.
Barry, we talked about this on video a little bit earlier, but what does this position battle say about either of these guys? Is it that Caleb Kelly isn't living up or hasn't lived up to his promise as a five-star, or is this about the incredible comeback that Curtis Bolton has made from a couple of season-ending injuries?
Both. The perseverance of Curtis Bolton is exemplary. I think the coaches want to reward that. I think he was pretty – you know, he seemed to be a solid player before he got hurt.
Yeah, I mean, he made all kinds of special teams plays for him.
So, I mean, when he got hurt early, you know, it was a blow to that team. So, I think he's done a great job of getting himself back into the mix. But clearly Caleb Kelly has not blossomed the way the coaches hoped, the way he hoped, the way fans hoped, the way anybody hoped when you're talking about a five-star recruit who was so ballyhooed. So I think it's just that Kelly's not as good or hasn't been as good as we were led to believe. And Curtis Bolton is a guy that's saying, hey, I deserve to play.
Well, especially after last year when they talked so much about him, when they, you know, were shifting Caleb Kelly around to try to find ways to keep him on the field and everything like that. Now it's just we're going to push him inside. And, you know, Brendan Radley-Hiles has gotten all that talk about being that guy. It seems like every year there's that one guy who they say, we want to get this guy on the field all the time. 2 years ago it was Will Johnson, and that sort of hybrid secondary linebacker spot didn't really work out really well for him. Last year it was Caleb Kelly, just sort of fell into the mix. This year it's Brendan Radley-Hiles that everybody talks about being that hyped. Is this the year we finally see one of those guys live up to it, Joe?
I mean, maybe so with Brendan Radley-Hiles. I mean, he's a guy that we've just, you know, I haven't been around for that long, but just in the couple weeks since I've been here, Buki's name is probably the most popular on the defense right now, as far as maybe it's just fun to say, but...
Correct pronunciation, by the way, Joe.
Yeah,
good job.
I appreciate that. So he's just a guy that, you know, the expectations are sky high. He's going to have to be great to live up to those. But from everything that we've heard, when we've talked about freshmen that'll play, like, he's the one that it's just a given that he's going to be out there.
I'm looking forward to it. If you're asking me what I'm looking forward most to seeing Saturday, that's it. But even more so than Kyler Murray, because I mean, I think I have a pretty good grasp on how Kyler's going to play. I think he's going to play well. He's not going to be Baker Mayfield, but I think he's going to play well. But this guy, I mean, he hasn't played a college game and drawing comparisons to Roy Williams, for crying out loud. So if there's another Superman flying around, I want to see it.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you, Barry, and that's funny because that was the next thing I was going to ask is what you're most looking forward to seeing, or most the question that you're most looking forward to starting to see answered on Saturday that you don't know right now.
Well, then we're back to linebackers.
Okay.
FAU's offense will test you.
Right.
I think the Sooners ought to just roll over them when OU has the ball. But FAU can move the ball. And I think it'll be a test for the OU linebackers. OU's defensive line is what it is. It's good, solid, no star power. They're not going to disrupt anything, but they can stand there and sort of put up a front. The secondary's much better. I think it's going to be fine. Can OU get good linebacking play? It did not have good linebacking play last year, and it really that's the number one thing that kept OU out of the national title game.
Yeah, so, I mean, we saw that time and time again in the Rose Bowl, that they weren't able to slow down those guys in the run game on the Georgia side. What about you, Joe? What's the question that you're most looking forward to starting to see answered on Saturday?
I'm definitely with Barry as far as those linebackers and how they face a guy like Devin Singletary in the season opener when, you know, Florida Atlantic's offense is no slouch. I mean, it's going to be a really tough test. But as for what I'm kind of most excited to see is just if the offense changes at all under Kyler Murray, and I know one game is not a big enough sample size to see that, and I know, you know, we're not going to be able to really judge his, you know, how he's going to be as Oklahoma starting quarterback after one game, but just to see him in there, to see how the offense kind of responds to him and all the weapons that are sort of at his disposal, and then his own weapon, his legs, and how he runs.
Yeah, and okay, Barry stole my number one answer. You stole the second answer I was thinking of, so I'm going to give something different and say that I'm looking forward to seeing the other defensive end spot, Kenneth Mann and Ronnie Perkins, what they're able to do. Mann was a guy who was a good pass rusher last year, had, what was it, 5 sacks, I think, in backing up DJ Ward, was pretty much exclusively what they used him as. Ronnie Perkins, a big-time hype freshman from St. Louis. You know, they've talked about the steps that Mann has taken. They've talked about how great Ronnie Perkins is. I'm looking forward to seeing that spot and how both those guys react.
How much will Perkins play? You think he's going to play a bunch?
I think he's going to play a pretty fair amount, especially on Saturday. We'll see if Mann takes over and just runs with it. They've talked about how Ken Mann can be an every down guy this year, but I think they want to see what Ronnie Perkins can do. And you know, I'd probably put him, when you're talking about freshmen, like the power scale, of guys that you expect to contribute. I probably put him third behind Bookie Radley Hiles and Deshaun White. That is right, Deshaun White, right?
Got
I keep
it.
Wanting to say Deshaun Stevenson, which is not.
Deshaun Stevenson's the old Dallas Maverick.
Right, number 92, yeah. I think.
Yeah. And every time I say it, I'm like hitching a little bit. But I think that those two guys are probably going to be the two most important freshmen. But I think Ronnie Perkins is going to get some run as well. If he hadn't been hurt, I think Jalen Redmond would have been a guy who would have been right up there, probably behind Radley Hiles as well. On that list.
Let me ask you guys this, and I do not know the answer. What's going to be the predominant OU defensive alignment? You think it's going to be a 4-2-5, a 3-3-5, a 3-4-4? What are they going to? What kind of defense this guy?
Well, I think it's going to be pretty much a 3-3-5. I think you're going to see, them do some different things with that. Jack linebacker spot.
So a 3-3-5 counting the Jack, which is Gumps or Mark Jackson, as one of the in the middle three, counting them as a linebacker.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what we're going to see primarily from Oklahoma.
That's okay. That'd be all right. I mean, I don't really count. Almost full-time pass rushers like Oboe was almost full-time.
I mean, I think it's going to be that Jack spot's going to be much more of a linebacker this year than it has been
I don't know if I like that. You don't have a bunch of good linebackers. Do what some teams do. Don't play as many linebackers.
Although we know what happened a couple years ago when Oklahoma tried
I'm not saying don't play any linebacker. Don't play a 407. That's what 407. They literally – I don't know. Were you? You were.
That was probably around when.
What year was that? That was 14. Was that 14?
Yeah.
Was that the 14 game or was that the 12 game? In West Virginia when Tavon Austin ran crazy.
I think it would have been the 12 game. Yeah, it was the 12 game.
It was?
Yeah. Because in 14, I was on the beat.
You weren't on the beat?
I wasn't on
when
the
Tavon
beat.
Austin?
When the Tavon Austin thing happened, no.
Ran out loud. The little you really literally ran a had a defensive line with no linebackers.
It did not.
I bet Tavon Austin had 300 yards that night before he was touched. Yards after touch was not big, before he was ever touched, he had a bunch of yards.
Yeah, so somebody start tracking that. Yeah. I think Joe, that's on you to track.
All right, I'll track that.
Because Jason Kersey a few years ago had to chart all of Adrian Peterson's carries, which is still lounging on his computer somewhere. I think you need to start Tavon Austin's yards after touch.
Yeah. We'll see how relevant that is Saturday, but I'll have the stat regardless.
Okay. Get to work. Barry, who do you think the left tackle is going to be for this team?
I think the left tackle for this team is going to be Cody Ford. Talking about offense?
Yeah.
Cody Ford.
What about you, Joe?
I will trust Barry's expertise on this one. Not at the point yet where I've got a solid prediction on specific starters.
I mean, we know who the tackles are going to be. It's going to be Ford and Evans. You're just saying which side. Right.
And Barry, I'm with you. I think it's going to be Cody Ford. Cody Ford's talked about how he feels more comfortable on the right side, but Bill Biedenboe has said he's better on the left side.
Well, and he's mobile. He talks about the quickness factors, slim down. And that's what you need. You need to be able to kick out wide and get those edge rushers. And we know Bobby Evans is an elite right tackle. So why screw up an elite right tackle? Just let him be an elite right tackle.
Exactly. And I'm not sure left versus right is as big a deal now in this offense with this quarterback with Kyler Murray than it typically is.
Probably right, because he may be less – he's going to be less of a pocket passer. Baker Mayfield was less of a pocket passer than, say, Sam Bradford or Jason White or somebody. But Murray's going to be even less so. You're right. So he's going to be more shoulder square to the end zone more than that left shoulder facing the end zone. So I would agree. And I think you'll see Cody Ford at the left and Evans at the right tackle. That means Samia and Ben Powers at the guards, right?
Yeah.
With whoever at center. It's going to be a great offensive line. I mean,
whatever combination of those six guys play,
You sleep. It's gonna you be sleep a... well. And then you got what? Alex Dalton backing up.
Yeah, you've got Alex Dalton backing up. You've got Quinn Mittermeier on the back. They talked. It was a big special teams guy for them along the front a year ago. They feel good about him. A couple of Tyrese Robinson, who redshirted last year. Adrian Ealy, who redshirted. So they're building up a little bit more depth there, especially at the tackle spot. Not as much tackles, not as much depth on the inside, but that's where a guy like Alvarez really comes in handy. And also, when you're talking about depth on the outside, Drew Samia has the ability to kick out and play tackle, as we saw as a freshman when he started.
Yeah, so, you know what? From what people say, they got four guys on this line that'll play in the NFL, at least four. Maybe even more than that. But Samia, Humphreys, Evans, and Ford seem likely NFL players. And if that's what you got, you're in great shape. You can always, you know, if the passing game disintegrates, you can always just say, hey, we're going to go Wisconsin on you, and here we come, and we're going to try to beat you 24-20 and run for 307 yards and hold the ball for 40 minutes. And they're good enough to do that against a lot of teams. Now, you can't do it against Alabama, can't do it against Georgia. You might not even do it against Texas. But against most teams, you can do that with this roster.
All right, let's talk about what's going to happen Saturday. And first, we'll go with a bold prediction for the game on Saturday against FAU. Once again, 11 a.m. on Fox. Joe, bold prediction.
Bold prediction. I will say, I haven't thought about this one before. I will say Kyler Murray and his debut as the full-time starter rushes for, gosh, how bold do I have to go? More than 100 yards? Is that way too bold?
That's bold. But that's the point of bold predictions, is
point.
To be bold. So.
That is, but Murray over 100 yards rushing would be bold, unless he goes 68 on the first play, and then, right. You know, then yeah. It's not too easy. It's not too hard to get to 100.
Which happened the last time he, quote-unquote, started a game.
Yeah, I don't know why he had to put quotes around it. He started that game. He started.
He did start, but Baker Mayfield was came in, you know, on the third offensive play of the game for them. And I know he would have set out that drive regardless, but when it's the drive is two plays long, the suspension is two plays long. But worked. Barry, what you got for a bold prediction?
Bold prediction for this game. All right, here's one. I'm going to say Drake Stoops makes three catches. How's that? That's pretty bold.
I think that's more bold than mine.
I'm going to say Drake Stoops, and heck, for all I know, he's not going to play and he's going to redshirt. But I'm going to say, because he might get some at the end. I think you'll see some mop-up duty tomorrow. So the crowd will go crazy if he gets a catch or two. Now, he might get three. I'm going to say that. Drake Stoops,
all right.
Three catches. Here's the deal. According to Joe, young Bob Stoops is foregoing game day in Iowa City, where they're honoring the 1983 Iowa team, of which he was a graduate assistant. So Bob loves to go back to Iowa, and he's going to Iowa. He's going to be there Friday night for festivities, but he's coming back here Saturday for the 11 a.m. kickoff.
And if he's coming back here.
If he's coming back, I think he believes Drake Stoops is going to play football.
Yeah, he
I
might.
Didn't make that connection, but that's pretty good.
Know a thing or two. And my bold prediction is going to stay with the offensive side as well, and it winds up going hand-in-hand with Barry's. Because if Barry's thing happens, I'm going to guess that one of those passes at least comes from one Tanner Mordecai. And I'm going to say Tanner Mordecai throws a touchdown pass.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's
I like
my
it.
Favorite one.
Hey, if Tanner Mordecai throws a touchdown pass to Drake Stoops, we will stand up in the press box and high five. Me and Bobby Hebert, right there. And nobody else will know, besides you, Joe, nobody else will even know what's going on.
I have to get in on the high fives just because I was present for this.
So I don't think there's any question that Tanner Mordecai is going to redshirt this year, but you've got a chance to play him in four games. Why not play him in this one if Oklahoma gets a decent lead? I think they do, and I think that Tanner Mordecai winds up coming through in the end.
Let me say this. I got this from a practice visitor who's not a football guy, but one of those guys they let into practice. Before they named a quarterback, before they named Murray over Austin Kendall, this guy emailed me and said, by the way, the freshman kid looks fantastic. So there you go. Tanner Mordecai, challenging for the quarterback job.
Well, good. I was sort of holding my breath as you're saying that, Barry, that you weren't going to say, like, oh, that the guy said that Tanner Schaefer was by far a better quarterback than the other Tanner in the quarterback room. So,
is Tanner Schaefer back to fourth team now?
Yes.
Remember that a couple of years, was it last year, we talked about just an injury or two?
Well, yeah. I mean, really the last
two injuries in Norman and one injury in Stillwater, and we could have had a bedlam battle of walk-on quarterbacks from the Texas Panhandle.
Yeah.
Taylor Cornelius versus Tanner Schaefer, because he's from Canadian, right?
He is.
Tanner Schaefer's from Canadian,
Texas.
Yeah. So that would have been fun, but now he's fourth team. He may never see the field.
All right, and I've sort of given away how I think this game's going to play out with my bold prediction. I don't have the score in front of me right now, but prediction? Okay. But, Joe, what did I pick?
You said 48-17 Oklahoma.
Yeah, 48-17 Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma winds up coming out and ahead in this one. I think Devin Singletary is really good, but I think Oklahoma finds a way to get it done. Joe, what's your score, and what do you think is going to play out?
I picked a little closer game, 38-21 OU. I think the offense might take a little while to get going. Florida Atlantic's good enough to score 21 points, but still win by, you know, two touchdowns plus a field goal.
All right, Barry, what do you got? And Joe's got your score.
I got 48-21.
Okay.
OU, and I think if they get in this neighborhood of what we're all picking, Mike Stoops would be the happiest guy in town. If Florida Atlantic doesn't go past 21 or 24, I think Mike Stoops will sleep easy Saturday night.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, it's going to be a fascinating non-conference schedule. This is the first one in that, with this one, Florida Atlantic on Saturday, UCLA next week, then 2 weeks later against Army, all at home. We won't get into the Army pay-per-view thing. Maybe we can talk about that next week. But we're going to wrap it up on that note. Thank you so much for joining us. We're actually going to be back Saturday, hopefully get it uploaded Saturday night after the game. We're going to record a podcast Saturday night after the game and try to get a little bit more regular with these things. But thank you so much for joining us. Until then, you can check out all of our work every day at newsok.com and every morning in the Oklahoman for the best OU coverage anywhere.